Here today for biographies of great Rabbanim, we will discuss Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski of blessed memory, who was born in 1863 and died in 1940. For many years, the Tzaddik Rav Moshe Aryeh Grudzinski and his wife were childless, and so unhappy were they that at this misfortune they decided to separate and divorce. And about that time, the rabbi was offered the post of Rav to the township of Via near Vilna, the capital of Lithuania, and in the hope that a change of venue might bring a change in their fortunes, the couple decided to postpone their divorce for 3 years. And indeed, their luck did change, and their prayers were answered. For in Avia, the Rebbetzin and gave birth to several sons and daughters. So grateful was she for the good fortune that had shone upon her in that town, the Rebbetzin made a vow never to leave Avia as long as she lived. One of her sons, Rav David Shlomo Grudzinski, took upon himself to extend the promise made by his mother, and he too never left Avia, where for 50 years he served as the town's Rav. But this story concerns one of her grandsons, Rav Chaim Ozer, the son of Rav David Shlomo Grudzinski, who was born in Avia in 1863. He was barely 10 years old when his father sent him away to learn yeshiva in Aishak, in the company of the young scholars of that town. His reason for sending the young boy away from home was to avoid little Chaim Ozer being given the appellation of genius, for indeed he was that, and a remarkable one too. He even shone among the scholars of Aishuk, all of whom were much older than he, and when he celebrated his bar mitzvah, the assembled rabbis and students invited him to make the customary drasha. Chaim Ozer replied that he had not prepared a drasha, but instead would recite by heart several pages from the Gemara, giving the guests a choice of two mesechtas which he had thus far studied. The visitors were enchanted with this unusual and unexpected surprise. They followed the young scholar's words in the books which each had been provided with, and were amazed at the accuracy of his memory. Page after page, Chaim Ozer recited and explained, thus confirming what his fellow students said to him, that he only had to be told something once for it to be indelibly recorded in his mind. Shortly after his bar mitzvah, Chaim Ozer was sent to the Volozhin Yeshiva to study under the famous Brisker Rav, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. There he learned according to Rav Chaim's system, although he had never applied it, but used it together with the more conservative and traditional method of study used for centuries by the rabbis of Vilna. Rav Chaim Ozer became an outstanding scholar at Volozhin, and the appellation of genius, which his father had endeavored to avoid before he was 10 years old, was applied to him before he was 14 years old. Volozhin called him the prodigy of Avia. Several years later, when he was passing through Vilna, he stayed for a while in town to pay his respects to several rabbis and scholars there. They were so delighted with his knowledge and obvious sincerity, he was invited to speak at the great shul of Vilna. On the appointed day and hour, the shul was packed. All the lamdanim, the talmidim, and the rabbanim were present to hear what the young genius had to say. Among them was one of the most highly respected rabbanim of Vilna, Rabbi Leor Eliezer, the son-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. When Rabbi Chaim Ozer finished his brilliant address, Rabbi Leor came up to him and invited him to his house. As a result of that visit, young Rabbi Chaim Ozer became the son-in-law of Rabbi Leor Eliezer, to the delight of his father, Rabbi David Shlomo, who had been a pupil and disciple of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and was thus proud his son should marry into such an esteemed and respected family. That is how it came about that Rav Chaim Ozer moved to Vilna and established his group of Avreichim yeshiva students, who became known as the group Rav Chaim Ozer. Many of the greatest Jewish scholars and teachers, some of whom occupy leading positions in Jewish communities and countries around the world, graduated from that group of Avreichim. It was through his father-in-law the young man was introduced to communal work, and it was in that field he was later to become renowned. Rabbi Leor Eliezer passed away in 1897, and the Jewish community in Vilna decided that his young son-in-law, Rav Chaim Ozer, was a worthy successor to the great man. Thus he was invited to become one of the Rabbanim of Vilna. But it was not long before Rav Chaim Ozer proved he was not just one of the Rabbanim of Vilna, but the rabbi of that city. Without either title or official recognition, he became mentor and confidant to one and all. And all who entered his house, depressed or worried, emerged smiling and confident, ready to follow the sound advice of the genius of Avia, or inspired by his words of encouragement and friendly attitude. In this respect, he was closely emulated by his successor, the Chazon Ish of Avram Yishayahu Karlitz. Rav Chaim Ozer applied all his many and talents towards aiding his fellow men. When the treasurer of a benevolent fund mislaid his account book, in which was recorded how much each recipient should receive from the total monies available, Rav Chaim Ozer wrote out from memory the sum each individual society was to get. Later the book was found, and compared with the figures written down by the Rav, his phenomenal memory had not failed him. Each amount tallied precisely with the sum recorded in the account book. Following the occupation of Vilna by Lithuanian forces and the confusion which existed between the ousting of one regime and the takeover by its successors, no official Lithuanian currency was available, and that previously used was declared invalid. The Jews of the United States came to the aid of yeshivas, but the individual Vilna was left penniless. At that time, Rav Chaim Ozer fell ill and was in desperate need of a specific medicine, but there was no money with which to purchase it. His family and close friends suggested that the money be borrowed from the funds sent to the yeshiva and returned as soon as Lithuania currency was put back into circulation, but the Rav would not hear of it. "I cannot touch that money," he declared, "for if for any reason I'm unable to return it, I shall have deprived the yeshiva of its benefit." Considerable sums of money were sent to Rav Chaim Ozer personally for distribution among the various deserving institutions. The accounts of those sums were kept by the Rav himself, for he refused to employ a clerk to assist him. The Torah, he would say, relies upon the finance of the Jewish people. Therefore, the accounting for it must be most carefully maintained and exceedingly accurate. The slightest error or the smallest of peculations is liable to deprive a man of his future in both worlds. For 20 years, Rav Chaim Ozer headed the organization set up to assist refugee Rabbonim from Russia, whose communist government had deprived them of their civic rights. He collected money from all over the world and used it to purchase food parcels, which were sent to the unfortunate Rabbonim to alleviate their sufferings. The recipients never knew who sent these much-needed foodstuffs, for the parcels were sent anonymously. He was forever enlisting others in his many social, charitable, and civic activities. Typical of this insistence that all who can help must was his attitude towards the woman who called upon him to complain of the conditions at the yeshiva in town. The woman had at one time been very wealthy, and during her heyday had headed the institution which provided financial and material assistance to the famous Ramlis yeshiva. However, she had fallen on bad times and no longer was wealthy. She had cut herself off from all social and civic work. She called on Rav Chaim Ozer to complain that she had recently passed by the yeshiva and had been shocked to see that the students slept on torn straw palaces, not even mattresses, but palaces. She told him how upset she had been to see this, and that although she was no longer connected with yeshiva, she felt she could not ignore what went on there, and therefore reported to him so he would take action. Rav Chaim Ozer realized how deeply affected the woman was, as much by what she had seen as by the fact that she was no longer in a position to provide the necessary financial aid. "I must tell you," he said, "that it is your own fault the yeshiva has so deteriorated. It all stems from the fact that you withdrew your attention from it. Do you think that just because one has no money to give, one need give nothing? Organization and attention are more important than money. I will give you the money to buy the food to buy the boys' proper mattresses, if you will go back to looking after the organizational side of the yeshiva." The Chofetz Chaim never ceased from lauding and extolling the courageous spirit and valiant soul of Rav Chaim Ozer. He said of him, "Rav Chaim Ozer is not merely a personality. He is a complete institution, a vital institution of Torah, who must be carefully looked after and cared for." And when the yeshivas fell upon hard times and were in serious financial distress, Rav Chaim Ozer was requested to go to the United States to seek assistance in their hour of great need. But Rav Chaim announced that he was not well. "I would gladly go," he said, "if my health permitted it. But what can I do I'm ill. When the Chofetz Chaim heard that, he said, if Rav Chaim Moses is not well, he must not go. He's worth more to Judaism than all the Jewish people. At the very height of his manifold activities for communal welfare, tragedy struck him and his household. He had an only daughter, a beautiful girl who was his pride and joy. Suddenly, when she was 16 years old, full of bloom of early youth, vigorous and happy, she was stricken with a terrible disease, which kept her bedridden in agony for 4 long years, until at last she passed away. Rav Chaim Moser never overcame the shock. Every day, after several hours of intensive work, he would leave the house and walk in Vilnius Municipal Park. He would look at the Jewish children playing there, watch their happy and expressive faces, and all of a sudden a terrible moaning sigh would burst forth from his lips. His heart was breaking with the thought of his lost child. However, he never allowed his feelings to affect his attitude towards his fellow men. On the contrary, he plunged even deeper into activities on behalf of the general public. He would often repeat, "Jewry depends as much on the landed gentry as upon the rabbinate, and the difference between them is a mere thread, which places us under an important obligation. The landed gentry to do things voluntarily, while the rabbi is a paid servant. For a rabbi is first and foremost a rabbi, and only in his own time is he entitled to do as he likes and participate in activities on behalf of his group or party. Thus he must always bear in mind that his first duty is towards his profession as a rabbi, and must always give preference to whatever duties are expected of him in that capacity to the exclusion of all other duties." In 1909, he convoked a meeting of rabbis for the purpose of organizing the Orthodox Jewish community in Russia. All the greatest rabbinical scholars of the age attended, and among them were Rav Chaim of Brisk, the Gaon of Shastrasu, the Gaon of Karlin, the Chofetz Chaim, the Admor of Gir, the Admor of Lubavitch, and many others. The leading light of the convention was Rav Chaim Moser. He had a finger in every aspect of the proceedings, whether minor or important. As long as it would lead to a unification of Russia's Orthodox Jewry for purposes of joint spiritual activities, the convention brought into being the organization known as Knesset Israel, the aims of which were to develop spiritual activities among Russian Jews. But the Russian government could see nothing but danger in the blessed work of that organization and ordered it disbanded. Rav Chaim Moser participated in the Founders Convention of Agudas Israel held in Katowice in 1912. He naturally became one of the central figures at the convention, emerging as president of the Council of Rabbinical Scholars and one of the leading personalities of the first, second, and third Knesset Gedolim. His association with Agudas Israel in no way affected his realistic approach to people and problems, and laymen continued to seek his advice and aid. And when Grusenberg, the deputy of Beilis, was sworn in as a member of the Kerensky cabinet in July 1917, he asked that the oath of allegiance be a religious one and insisted that it be given by Rav Chaim Moser. The First World War forced Rav Chaim Moser to quit Vilna and seek refuge in outlying towns of Chomel and other places, for he was on the list of those rabbis whom the Soviet authorities wished to banish to Siberia. He wandered from town to town for 3 years, at each place accomplishing the most amazing feats of organization and spiritual welfare. Hundreds of yeshivas and religious schools, dozens of charitable institutions and aid societies were founded by him in the various cities he happened to stay at in the course of his wandering. The graduates of those new yeshivas were in later years to risk their lives during World War II, so that they can continue studying Torah without harm or hindrance. By the time Rav Chaim Moser returned to Vilna at war's end, the hostilities had created havoc among the Jewish community, and he found that utter confusion and laxity had replaced their spiritually ordered lives. With tremendous energy, he set about the task of reorganizing the Jewish community and reviving the religious code that had guided its footsteps throughout the generations. Within a few months, he had performed miracles, and Vilna's Jews were again living the sedate, orderly lives they were accustomed to. In fact, when a delegation of Jews from the United States visited Vilna on an inspection of conditions of the community there, they were amazed at the enormous and unbounded energy and vitality of the Rav, who had performed wonders. Several years later, when aid from the United States gradually decreased and finally ceased, he founded the Vad HaYeshivas, the Yeshiva Committee, as the central financial body for all yeshivas throughout Poland and Lithuania. This body developed into a huge organization to which were connected hundreds of Jewish religious schools and yeshivas, at which more than 5,000 Jewish boys studied. Invitations from several large and important Jewish communities to accept the position of Rav of their towns were constantly being presented to Chaim Ozer. To each such an invitation, his reply was an unequivocal refusal. Were I offered the very best position in the world, he would say, I will and can live nowhere but among a religious community. Vilna was duly grateful for this attitude and the compliment it implied, and endeavored to express their gratitude by increasing the rabbi's salary. But they too met with a refusal, albeit a conditional one. But the rabbi's reply was, I will only accept an increase in my salary if you increase the salaries of the members of the rabbinate as well. His house was constantly teeming with visitors, and it was a rare occasion for the door to be shut more than a few minutes at a time. Rav Chaim Ozer gave his attention to all and everyone in need of him. When he prayed, large red spots would appear on his forehead. His doctors diagnosed that they were caught by the rabbi's supreme efforts to rid his mind of the extraneous thoughts which coursed through his brain, at least for the duration of his prayers. Thousands of letters were dispatched by him, and all were written by hand. Rav Chaim Ozer insisted upon writing all his own letters because, as he would say, if the person I'm writing to sees that I have written to him myself, maybe he'll become more inclined to make an effort to do what I ask of him. His well-known Sefer Achiezer, a compendium of the hundreds of problems and questions which were presented to him for decisions during his years as a community rav, was written chapter by chapter during his annual holiday. Even while he was expected to rest from his arduous labors, he would not permit himself the luxury of doing so. However, in later years, he was to say, years ago I thought that writing was a dignified occupation, but when I grew older, I came to the conclusion that it's a child's play compared with the work of assisting widows and orphans, or yeshiva students or those starving for want of a crust of bread. The Sefer Achiezer was recognized by rabbinical authorities as a practical handiwork of halachic law, inasmuch as it was a combination of the Vilna system and of Chaim's system of study and interpretation. The Musar, or moral code, of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was part and parcel of the very makeup of Chaim Ozer. On one occasion, he decided to spend his vacation at a place on the outskirts of Vilna. There, he was offered a very comfortable apartment, which his family found most attractive, and suggested he rent it. Rav Chaim Ozer then noticed that the kitchen was situated at a quieter distance from the living rooms. Turning to his family, he said, ask the maid, she has no objection to the apartment, and if she approves of it, take it. In 1939, and the world again plunged into war, Vilna became a refuge for yeshiva students. Despite his already very advanced age and declining health, Rav Chaim Ozer was a tower of strength, encouragement and inspiration to all who sought his aid. In those fearful days of nerve-shattering and soul-searing alarm, his one concern was that yeshiva students should be provided with all they required. No postponement for lack of money was his often repeated motto. Never before or since has the world seen a more devoted communal worker than Rav Chaim Ozer proved himself to be in those trying days. The horrible fate of Polish Jewry caused him the deepest of anguish and torment. His unrelenting and tireless efforts to snatch at least the great rabbinical leaders and Talmudic authorities from the jaws of death resulted in hundreds and even thousands being saved by certificates of immigration which he provided them. Yet with all the tremendous burden he had to cope with, he still found time to listen and advise anyone who came to see him. A young couple about to wed called on him to ask his blessing. During the course of their conversation, the rabbi asked the bride, do you know the laws pertaining to women? The girl blushed and did not reply. Rav Chaim Ozer got up from his chair and took the girl over to a corner of the room. "My dear," he said to the girl, "in normal times your mother or sister would have taught you these laws, but they are no longer with you, so I shall explain the most important of these laws to you. They are the very fundamentals of Judaism." For half an hour he lectured the girl on the special laws which apply to her sex, despite the fact that his waiting room was crowded with people patiently waiting their turn to see the one man who could perhaps be of help to them. When he had completed his talk, he blessed the couple and requested the Rebbetzin to attend the wedding so as to add dignity and happiness to their wedding. Words are inadequate to describe the heights of greatness and glory attained by Reb Chaim Ozer in the first year of the Holocaust. Lithuania was not yet crushed under the Nazi heel and was therefore a refuge for thousands escaping certain death in Poland and other countries. They poured into Lithuania and there obtained permits to enter Soviet Russia in comparative safety. Reb Chaim Ozer was the only person at that time who considered himself totally obligated to the task of securing the welfare and safety of his fellow Jews. He was almost 77 years old, but only when he could no longer stand on his feet and was too ill to leave his bed did he rely upon others to do the work he had set himself. He enlisted the aid of Rabbi Akwinski, Rabbi Yecheskio Mishakovsky, one of the great and courageous rescuers, to whom he later wrote, "I'm indeed most grateful, Reverend Sir, that in my absence you have given comfort to all those in need of it. In fact, the way in which you have attended to matters makes me feel that I am redundant and no longer of use in this world." It was suggested to him that he apply for an immigration permit to Eretz Israel, to Palestine, which was known at that time, but the idea was totally unrealistic as far as he was concerned. How could he even consider emigrating when it would mean deserting his brethren to their fate in that vale of tears? Bitterly he met the suggestion with a wry smile, saying, "All I ask for is a visa to the hereafter." He worked unceasingly on behalf of the refugees right up to the last moments of his life. He would encourage himself and others by saying, "After all, let us not despair." On the night before he died, he said in reply to someone who had wished him a peaceful night, "Leil Menuchel, who can tell? In any case, I have no complaints to make to the Almighty." On Friday, the 5th of Menachem Av, in July 1940, Reb Chaim Ozer lay down to rest. He died in his sleep. The following Sunday was laid to rest, and the entire Jewish community of Vilna walked behind his casket to the cemetery, sobbing and weeping. Vilna, in its most glorious days, in the time of the great Gaon of Vilna, and in the numerous outstanding Jewish leaders and Talmudists whose city it was, Vilna, they called this Yerushalayim of Lithuania, never mourned the passing of his son as bitterly or deeply as it did of Chaim Ozer Brzezinski. He was indeed the last of the great rabbis of Vilna, for the Jewish community of that city was completely wiped out by the Nazi hordes by the end of World War II. With this, we have concluded our story from Chaim Ozer Brzezinski Zitzal. All this story is taken from a sefer called Men of Distinction by Rabbi Issa Frankel. If you are interested in learning Jewish history, please visit us online at EnglishTorahTapes.com, where you could listen or download Shiurim on Jewish history. You can also go to a section called Study of the Holocaust by Rabbi Nosson Sherman. And you can also go to Shiurim by Rabbi Elazar Gross, all on Jewish history.